So today on the program, we're really happy to feature for the first time here on AM Quincy, the New England Wildlife Center, located in Weymouth and also a location on the Cape as well. So the Chief Executive Officer, Zach Mertz, has joined us to tell us a little bit about the center, about himself, and about how you might be able to get involved as well. So Zach, great to meet you, first of all. Thanks for coming over.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. We hear all the time, you know, on the news when these animals get in distress throughout the community, is taken to the New England Wildlife Center for treatment. I'm thinking, what is the New England Wildlife Center? You know, it's right down the street, basically, in South Weymouth. And it has a 40-year history here on the South Shore, right? But I was never really familiar with what exactly it is. So I thought, let's call them up and see if they can come in and tell us. Thank you.
Well, we appreciate the opportunity. Yeah. And I wish I could say that's a unique story, but we like to say we're the best-kept secret on the South Shore. Because, you know, we have been around for 40 years. Yeah. We've been a part of the Quincy community for 40 years. And we provide a lot of critical services, but it's one of those places that if you haven't stopped in when you were driving by, or you haven't necessarily found an injured animal or had an education program with us, you might not know everything
right.
we offer. And,
yeah.
and so we love coming out and sharing what we do and just trying to, you know, pull more people into the throes and build the community.
Yeah, well, we hope to remove some of the secrecy here
yeah.
today. So what is the New England Wildlife Center, Zach?
So it's a bit of a loaded question.
Yeah.
We're a lot of things,
yeah.
but at the heart, we are a wildlife veterinary hospital. And so we'll provide free veterinary care to sick, injured, and orphan wildlife. But what we do is we use that as a platform to teach people, right? Our true belief is that the only way you're going to build true conservationists and stewards of the environment and preserve it for the next generation is to get people involved, get them involved early, get them hands-on, and really show them what's happening to wildlife in their backyard and what they can do to fix it. And so we use this platform to pull in, you know, everybody from kindergartners to 80-year-old folks that want to know more about wildlife, and whether they connect to us through the veterinary care side or the, you know, they want to take a nature walk with us, or they want to do an art project with us. Anything we can do to find relevance between their life and our programs, we try to promote and pull people in.
Yeah. So how did it all get started 40 years ago? You probably even born, probably.
Yeah. You know, I've been there for most of my life,
is that
believe
right?
it or not.
Yeah.
But it all got started out of the Hingham Animal Clinic about 40 years ago. There wasn't much wildlife medicine back then.
Mm.
It was sort of an obscure concept that you'd take care of a wild animal. Usually they were just, you know, if they got into trouble, nature did its thing.
Right.
But as development progressed and there were more roads put in and buildings, a lot more of the injuries we're seeing in wildlife were human caused. And so a really dedicated group of veterinarians, his name was Don Smith, and some other partners, they started to treat wildlife. And then I think about 38 years ago, my father, actually, Greg Mertz, is a vet, became the executive director, and Katrina Bergman came on board, and they really sort of built it up in Hingham at first, and then eventually moved to Weymouth about 15 years or so ago.
Okay.
And the program has just grown, and it's sort of swelled with community support, and really, there's a huge need, especially in the city of Quincy. We actually get probably about 20% of our patients come to us from the city of Quincy.
Is that right?
Just because it's a, you know, big populated place,
sure.
and you have some great wildlife here.
Yeah.
And sometimes when, you know, people and wildlife share the same habitat, things go wrong.
Right.
But it's, you know, it's something that's really evolved with the community of people that we're serving.
So that's interesting. So this really has been a part of your entire life through your dad, right? So is that what inspired you to get involved?
Yes. Yeah. I always say for better or worse,
yeah.
I was here from the beginning, but he would take me in a backpack as a little kid when he was, you know, in there working with animals. And I remember, you know, growing up, those kind of the Wild West days, but they were, you know, I had an 18-foot Burmese python that lived in my bedroom with me. We had frequent owl visitors. I remember one time, whole family of squirrels escaped into our house and ran along the pipes and the plumbing in the basement. So it's something I've always been a part of.
Yeah.
And something as I grew up, I really, really saw the value in and chose to, I guess, follow in the footsteps and try to keep it going.
Well, you made a career out of it, right? You studied about it? You went to school for it?
Yeah, you know, I knew I loved science. I was always a little more environmentally focused.
Uh-huh.
I was a hydrologist before
this. I see, okay.
And I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do, but when our second location, the Cape Wildlife Center, we found out it was going out of business. No one was able to step up and save it. It was a similar structure to what we had, but on Cape Cod.
Mm-hmm.
And so the New England Wildlife Center, we were small, didn't have a lot of financial resources, but knew how critical that facility was going to be, not just for the wildlife, but the people who live on the Cape. They really needed a veterinary resource. And so when no one stepped up, eventually we said, you know, let's give this a 6-month shot. We'll just provide free veterinary care and free management.
Oh, I see.
And so we partnered with the Pegasus Foundation, the Humane Society, and us. And, you know, it just works. Everything clicked. Our goal was to treat, I think, you know, 600 patients in the first year, and we did like 2,000 or 2,500.
Really?
And so it just snowballed, and eventually it became clear that no one else was going to step up.
Yeah.
So we took the plunge, and I became the executive director down there.
I see.
And that's sort of when I really knew that was the direction my career was going to go in, and then eventually we were able to merge the two hospitals, and today we're one organization doing the same thing in two locations.
Yeah, the New England Wildlife Center. So do you take animals from all over New England?
So mostly focused in Massachusetts.
Okay.
But pretty much every town and city in Massachusetts in a given year, we will serve in some way or another.
Yeah.
And then occasionally, if there are, you know, say larger disasters, or there are other organizations we work with out of state in New England, we will definitely go out and provide veterinary
care. Sure. I do want to mention, I think it's important, you have a Master's of Science from UMass, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. I studied at UMass, you know, not too far from here.
Yeah.
Loved it. It was an amazing community school, and I was really focused on the environmental side.
Yes.
And I think, I don't know if that was me being a little rebellious in a nerdy way, sort of saying, you know, I want to get away from the individual animal and focus on environmental health.
Mm.
But, you know, after working in both fields, it's so clear that they're connected,
mm-hmm.
right? You can't have a habitat without healthy individual animals. You can't have healthy individual animals without a healthy habitat.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just so linked that the only way to really solve this is to work on both problems at once.
Mm.
And that's really what the center does. It promotes the individual veterinary care, but uses that platform to show folks how they fit into the environment and why protecting environmental health is so important. And in fact, we're doing a really cool project right now in Quincy.
Oh, do tell.
I think over at Sailor's Home Pond,
yeah,
it's called.
Sure. Yeah.
They are doing some remediation work,
yes.
You know, trying to clean up the pond, do some dredging. And we had done something similar a few years ago at Butler's Pond.
Mm-hmm.
When they dredge, you know, they're pulling all the contaminated sediment up, and occasionally you will pull up things that live at the bottom as well, like turtles. And so with Butler's Pond, we actually, before they dredged and did anything, they actually captured all of the turtles out of there, brought them to us, we cared for the turtles, tended to any injuries they might have, got blood levels, heavy metal levels, a lot of really cool data. And it worked amazing. And we released the turtles when the pond was clean.
Yes.
And so now with Sailor's Home Pond, we're just at the beginning stages of starting to do this project as well, and we're super excited about it. Because it's sort of a new paradigm in restoration work. It's, you know, people think about just changing the physical habitat.
Yeah.
You know, for the long-term benefit of the animals, but you're not always thinking about the animals that live there now.
Yes.
And so yeah. By caring for those too, and then also using them to get a little data about, you know, what have they been exposed to? What's their health like? And then being able to look again down the road and say, wow, you know, this cleanup really worked. These turtles are healthier now.
Before and after, basically.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's a really cool new way to look at this type of restoration work. So we're excited.
So now the New England Wildlife Center is a nonprofit, 501c3 corporation, right? Do you have a board of directors?
We are absolutely a nonprofit.
Yeah.
We have a board of directors.
Yeah.
And we are totally donation funded, whether it's grants, you know, really important for us as individual guests.
Mm-hmm.
And the community has, you know, stepped up in a big way, obviously, for 40 years to mm-hmm. keep us going. But we are always looking to sort of figure out how we're going to make it through the next year.
Yes.
A lot of the services we provide are for free. And to be honest, a lot of the services we provide are to folks that may not have the financial means to support the work we do.
Yeah. What services do you provide? Let's talk a little bit about that, the veterinary services. Because you have staff veterinarians, right?
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
We have, I think, 5 veterinarians on staff.
I
think the whole staff is about 27.
Yeah.
And that can balloon up to 35 in
the
summer.
It's a formidable organization.
It's really grown.
Yeah.
It's grown out of, you know, nothing else but the true need for the type of work we do. So
we do
the free veterinary care for wildlife. We also run a fee-for-service practice, we call it,
okay.
even though we don't really make money on it. It's called the Odd Pet Vet.
Odd Pet Vet.
The Odd Pet Vet.
Okay. So for, like, kind of exotic pets? Is that what you're...
Well, depending on the day, either the pets are odd or the vets are odd,
okay.
but they're...
I'm sure they'll be thrilled to hear that.
Yeah. It was, I say that lovingly. It was,
of course.
It was, you know, started by my father back in the day.
Oh, okay. All right.
And it's a way for us to sort of generate some fee-for-service income, but really we're giving away low-cost veterinary care to folks that have non-traditional pets.
Okay, all right.
And so you think of, you know, there's a lot of places you can go and take your dog or cat if they get sick.
Mm-hmm.
If your 20-foot snake gets sick, there's not a lot of places
sure.
you can take it
sure.
that can safely accommodate it. So we do a lot of that. We'll see guinea pigs, hamsters, all of the pocket pets, and then as a part of this, we give away a lot of free services to either folks that, you know, want to get the best care for their animal but can't afford it, or things like school classrooms where, you know, it's an important part of the kid's learning journey to be exposed to, say, a reptile, a turtle, but, you know, whatever classroom pet, but they don't necessarily have the means to take care or to pay for the vet bills either.
Sure.
And then we work with a lot of local nonprofits, so most of the Mass Audubon Sanctuaries, Museum of Science Boston, South Shore Natural Science Center, Capron Park Zoo sometimes, and so we provide, again, low-cost veterinary coverage, everything from, you know, the smallest 3-gram, you know, bat up to, we've done lions before and
really?
Bears and, yeah, you name it, so everything in between.
Wow, okay, so, I mean, your vets need to have a wide field of expertise, really.
Yes.
To be able to treat these animals, yeah.
Yeah, they always say they're generalists, right? I mean, you know, dog and cat, you get really good at two species, but when you treat 400 plus species in a year, you get to know a little bit about a lot of things.
Right.
And it's fun because you're always learning something, and there's always something new walking through the door, a new situation. So you definitely have to love being flexible and love learning to succeed in this field.
So I guess we should be clear that folks can't just bring their dogs and cats to the New England Wildlife Center, right?
No, unless they want to walk on the nature trail for medical treatment, we don't do much of that unless it's, you know, a special favor or something.
Yep.
But if you have a, you know, sick hamster, ferret, guinea pig, absolutely call us. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, and for the no-cost services, do they have to show income verification or things like that?
You know, we don't have a formal system.
Oh, okay.
And it's something we've wrestled with over the years.
Yeah.
It is really getting to know our clients on a personal level.
I see, okay.
And that's really what we're about. And if anybody comes to visit us, you'll see everything's windowed. You can see into all the exam rooms.
Yeah.
When you come for an exam on your pet, as long as it's not a critical issue, you usually have students right there learning with you of all ages. I'll tell you right now, it's April vacation week for us.
Yes, yeah.
So when I left the building today to come over here, I think there was like a 9-year-old, a 15-year-old, and then 2 vet students shadowing in surgery today.
Okay.
And so when you come to us, it's absolutely a learning experience for everybody, including the clients, including the students. And so we get to know them. We just sort of use our guts as to, you know, who needs help when. And it may not be a totally free service. It may be discounted.
Sure.
It may be if the person can afford to pay, then that helps us stay in business and do all the other things we do.
Yeah.
We just do our best to be good humans and try to understand.
Very much an honor system. Yeah. So, yeah. But it sounds like education is a huge part of your mission.
Yes. Yeah, we have a full education team now. Right. And you know, as we always say, our sort of carry through is kindness to people, kindness to animals.
Mm.
And so the short version of it is no animal walks through the door without a person attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if you don't take the time to stop your car and pick up that injured snapping turtle that got hit on the road, no one's ever going to find it. No one's ever going to give it vet care. And so what that turned into over the years was starting early. Our bread and butter is really, you know, probably first grade through sixth grade classes, but we do up to high school and then a ton of undergraduate students and vet students.
Oh.
But we firmly believe that getting into the classrooms, making science fun, and using the platform of veterinary medicine is nothing's more engaging than that, right? Because, you know, I stunk at math in school. It just was not my thing. But, you know, if you go into a classroom and you have a live hawk with you and you're telling them about it and you say, listen, we really need to calculate medicine for this patient back at our hospital. This is a real life situation. This bird ate rat poison. Here's how much this bird weighs. Here's the type of medicine we have to give it. And all of a sudden it clicks, right? That math that was sort of just abstract and you couldn't apply it, all of a sudden was saving an animal's life.
Interesting.
And so when you can give them that paradigm and help them understand through that lens, it's an incredibly powerful learning tool. And so we've just ran with that over the years.
Okay.
And today, I think this year, we'll probably do at least 100 classroom visits, probably 10,000 students between the programs in our hospital and out in the community.
Yeah, so you'll actually go out. So if teachers or administrators are watching and want to have somebody from the Wildlife Center come to their class, they can reach out and
absolutely
make a request.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anybody's interested, please reach out to us. Anybody's interested in funding those efforts so that we can go out to more schools, please get in touch with us. We'd love to work on either end of that problem.
Okay. And I know you've visited a number of schools in Quincy.
As well. Yeah. I think we just finished Atherton Hughes. We've been to Point Webster before. We've been in, you know, probably 5 to 10 different schools in Quincy over the last 10 years.
Yeah.
Between us, Quincy's our favorite. We'd love to come back and work with more students here. So if there are classrooms out there that are interested, we'd love to hear from teachers and administrators.
Now you mentioned you have a nature trail in Weymouth.
Yes. Yeah, we are unveiling our brand new nature trails.
Oh.
It's been about a three-year process, but we've always had 12 acres that we've protected and had trails on. A couple of years ago, it came up that the lot next to us was going to be developed. And part of it's a commercial lot, but part of it is wetland habitat, critical habitat. And so we work with the developers, a couple of stakeholders involved, and we were eventually able to help protect this brand new 40-acre parcel.
Wow.
And it's an amazing place. There's some incredible habitat out there. Mm. Things, you know, some of the mosses and stuff look like they've been untouched for 100 years.
No
kidding. It's an incredible place to go and learn and walk. So we've designed a nature trail to go behind our building. It's interactive, and then it'll send you out in this trail system that will connect to Cranberry Pond Trail System. And we've mapped the trails in a responsible way, so we're not disrupting any habitats, but it's just a really cool place for folks to come and learn. And we try to either give guided nature trails or do some curriculum along the way mm-hmm. that will show folks exactly what they're seeing, when, and then try to relate it back to the patients in our hospital.
Right, yes, yeah. So where are you in Weymouth, actually? Kind of, give folks an idea for how to get there.
Yeah, super easy to find.
Okay.
We are at 500 Columbian Street in Weymouth, which is right on the Braintree line, right off Route 3. It's probably 2-3 minutes off the highway. So if you're on Columbian Street, you'll mm-hmm. see the big Curtis mini mall liquor lot, and then we're tucked up behind that, and then our property now runs there, and then the 40 acres straight out.
Wow. Okay. So I mean, it's still a pretty urban. I know it's a suburb, but it's a pretty urban area. So to have 40 acres preserved is quite something.
Exactly. Yeah. The green space and especially in developed and developing areas
right.
is critical
yeah.
because poor wildlife, their habitat's been fragmented by think about the highways that have come in and the businesses that have come in. So anywhere you can have a contiguous even acre mm-hmm. is great. So when you get 40 acres that connects to other trail systems, it's cool for us as people, mm-hmm. but really for wildlife, that's where they travel. That's their highway.
Right, right. And is it open to the public, Zach? Can folks walk the trails?
We're open every day. The building's open 10 to 3 to the public every day.
Yeah.
The trails are open. We're just getting our sort of footing and implementing everything.
Sure.
But we think, pretty much until dusk.
Okay.
Every day they're open.
All right. And is there an admission charge? Can folks just come to the Wildlife Center and
yes.
tour?
Yes. Yes. You're always welcome to come. We ask, reasonably small $5 donation help
sure,
us keep
sure.
the lights on
sure.
and everything.
Yeah.
If you're going to do a self-guided tour, but you can also schedule programs
okay.
that are paid. It's 10 bucks a person. It's not much. We never want that to be a barrier for
yes.
folks learning. But we're open to anyone who wants to come in and explore and see what we do.
Okay. And where's the Cape Cod location?
So the Cape location is in Barnstable,
okay.
Just outside of Barnstable Village, pretty close to Hyannis.
Okay.
That's a really cool location. It's set up a little differently. It's not always open to the public. We try to do a few events a year.
Hmm.
But that one's really cool because it's a mix of, you get Hyannis, which is, semi-urban.
Yeah.
But then there's a ton of beach, so we get all the seabirds down there, and there's just some really critical habitats in between Weymouth and the Cape. And so we tend to see animals every single day from north of Boston all the way to P-Town.
Mm.
And I will say, one of the sort of surprising benefits of the other hospital, something we weren't thinking about, is being able to compare the health of patients on the Cape to the health of patients in Weymouth. And they're only 60 miles apart.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like that would be, you would see a lot of variations. But with things like avian flu emerging,
mm-hmm.
with trends in distemper or rabies or any of the wildlife diseases we're tracking, or say even something like an oil spill, if you start to see animals at one location that are acting strange, and then you can compare it to an area where they may have a geographic buffer, meaning the canal separating them,
yep.
it's an incredibly powerful diagnostic tool.
I see.
Or if you see the same odd things at both hospitals, that's a data point right there that tells you you need to explore this more.
Yeah.
And so it's something we've really found useful, and we're working with to do more research on how we can do some early identification of emerging diseases, right?
Yeah, we hear an awful lot about the sea turtles that are cold stunned on the Cape over the fall and winter. The treatment center right here in Quincy. Is the Wildlife Center also involved in that at all?
Not directly involved.
Okay.
We love working with all of our partners down there. IFAW, New England Aquarium,
mm-hmm.
Mass Audubon, Wellfleet. We do the terrestrial turtles, so
okay.
you think about cold stunned turtles, you think about the the big sea turtles. There's also an amazing species called the diamondback terrapin.
Mm.
It's endangered here in Massachusetts. They're only about this big,
mm-hmm.
but if you saw a picture of them, you'd probably recognize it right away. They're one of the turtles that were used in turtle soup back in the day. Okay. They were unfortunately overhunted, but they are marsh and estuarine turtles. Okay. So they'll be in a mix of salt water and fresh water. But because of that, they can get pulled out into the bay just like the sea turtles do, and they get cold stunned.
I see.
And so we do our smaller version of the cold stunnings. But we routinely work with our partners about, you know, new treatment ideas, what we're seeing, what they're seeing, and how it all relates.
Interesting. So, I mean, in the center's over 40-year history, what, 1983, I think it was founded, is that right? So over 40-year history now. What trends have you seen emerge that are facing wildlife in our area that, you know, over those past 40 years?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a hard question to answer, and we're living in an interesting time. Mm. In my, you know, decade working professionally in the field, we are seeing more threats emerge more quickly in the last 5 years than probably the previous 20 or 30.
Wow.
And so generally what you see is the animals you would see most commonly in your backyard are going to be the animals we see most commonly in our hospital. The animals that you see in trouble in your daily life, meaning hit by a car, dragged in by a cat, doing yard work, most commonly are they going to be the injuries we see most commonly in our hospital. But progressively, we're seeing things like, you know, I mentioned avian flu.
Yes.
That's a new thing in the last 2 or 3 years, this recent outbreak. That really upended everything that's going on in wildlife medicine for the sole reason of A, it's contagious from bird to bird.
Right.
It's potentially zoonotic, meaning it could potentially affect a bird and jump to a human or another species. We've heard a lot about cats. But what it's done for us is, you can imagine, we're pretty high volume. Say we take in, between the two hospitals, 50 patients a day this time of year.
A day, really?
Yep, so it's high volume. Yeah. But now every single bird that comes in, you have to suit up in PPE, you gotta wear a mask, you gotta wear gloves, and that bird has to be isolated until it tests negative for the virus.
I see, okay.
And so what used to be a short 15-minute exam process can now take 45 minutes, plus the expensive PPE, plus you gotta dedicate a room specifically to that bird, and the test results could take a couple days.
Wow, okay.
And so it's not just us, it's every hospital really across the country is sort of grappling with, what does the future look like? What is isolation protocols that are responsible look like? And where are we gonna get the resources to do it,
right? Interesting, yeah, and hadn't thought of that. The impact we see as consumers is the price of eggs, right, has skyrocketed.
Yep.
So that's economically, that's an impact as well, but I hadn't thought about the wildlife aspect of it. But,
yeah, yeah. It's, I mean, it's broad ranging and you know, it affects us. We, believe it or not, a lot of our patients eat eggs, so that price has gone up for us as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, wild birds are the reservoir for this disease. And so it does jump to poultry, but the ones that are going to spread it and harbor it are going to be the wildlife.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so there's a critical component that we're providing right now, which is monitoring wildlife populations. Because if you're trying to figure out who might be at risk or where this disease might jump to a poultry operation, knowing if there's positive cases in that area first is incredibly important. And we're unfortunately, with everything going on in the federal government right now, we're seeing some issues with testing. So we've really been doing our best to step up and try to facilitate testing wherever we can.
Yes.
But it's hard. You know, it's honestly, it's an important thing that needs more attention.
Yeah, something I haven't thought of. During the pandemic, Zach, did you see any changes in wildlife behavior or exposure?
We did. Yeah. It was an interesting time. Yeah. It was interesting. I mean, there was obviously left staff in the building.
Oh, sure. Yes.
We saw some challenges, meaning we were understaffed, but we also saw something really incredible happen in the community, which was our call volume, which is normally high, skyrocketed.
Ah.
And on its face, you'd think that was a bad thing, but the new calls we were getting were people just concerned about the wildlife they were seeing, and it was because for the first time, everybody was home.
That's right.
And they were paying attention, right? And so, you know, this time in, you know, 2021, people were paying attention to the birds building nests in their yard, and we would get calls like, you know, I love this family of hawks. My kids and I, we've named every single hawk in the nest, and we're worried because this one hasn't eaten, but mom's feeding this one. And it was just this incredible connection where people were really, truly paying attention. It almost became like their version of reality TV a little bit.
Right.
Where they were just paying, you know, seeing things they hadn't seen before.
Yeah.
Doing it with the whole family together.
Yeah.
And so it was a lot of work, but we love fielding those calls and just, you know, using that you know, captive audience to teach, and it was really cool.
Interesting, yeah. Has that waned now that things are kind of back to normal?
You know, we all get busy, but no, I mean, it certainly stuck with certain people. I know a lot of the bird feeder contingent, when they got those bird feeders during COVID,
yes.
You know, a lot of them kept going with that, which
all
is
right.
Great.
So a good point then is, you know, if somebody sees an animal they think is in distress in the wild, what's your advice?
Yeah, great advice. This time of year is when it's probably going to happen. You got all the baby animals being born right now. They get into trouble in their first year. Plus, you have mom and dad working extra hard to try to get all the resources they need to feed their babies.
Right.
And so this is like sort of peak wildlife injury season and orphaning season. If you see an animal in your yard, the best advice I can give you is make sure you're about 50 feet away.
Okay.
Wild animals don't want to be near humans, so they get stressed out. So observe from a distance.
Okay.
If you see any blood, you see any wounds, the animal's just really behaving abnormally, please call us.
Okay.
Our hotlines are open every day.
Okay.
We'd love to talk you through it. We might have you send us a picture of what's going on.
Right, yes.
And then here in Quincy, you're super lucky. You have an amazing animal control department. And in animal control over the years, especially back in the day, we get a bad rap sometimes.
Mm.
You know, people say, oh, they don't care about wildlife. They're not going to do anything. Absolutely not the case.
Okay.
Especially here in Quincy, you have a great department that knows a lot about wildlife, and we see them, you know, if we only see them once a day in the summer, that's a good day for us and them.
I
but
see.
Normally okay. it's closer to two or three times. So you can call. We're happy to give you advice, but you can also call your local animal control.
Yes.
And I will say this time of year, if the animal's injured or truly orphaned, we're happy to take it in.
Okay.
Bed space is at a premium right now.
Mm.
And so if they happen this morning, if you say bring us a great horned owl that it's out of the nest and it looks healthy, instead of just taking it and raising it, we may be back in your yard trying to build a fake nest, get that animal back, and do anything we can to get it back with the parents.
I see, okay.
Even if it needs a little help from people to make that happen,
yeah.
Mom always does it better. And
sure.
So, you know, a lot of cases this time of year are just kind of getting a little creative and trying to figure out how to keep the wild families together.
Gotcha. It's funny you bring that up. I just read a story just over this past weekend of a young owl that was found up at Mount Wollaston Cemetery here in Quincy, apparently blown out of the nest by all those high winds that we had. So somebody came upon it and, you know, was nurturing it back.
Yep, we know that owl well.
Oh, you do?
Yep.
Okay, yep. All right.
He ended up... last I heard, it didn't directly come into us, but we were involved in the situation, and he went to a great resource.
Okay.
And from what I heard, he's been successfully re-nested. I don't know if it's with the original family
right.
or a foster family,
right, right.
but he's back in the nest where he belongs.
Good news. I'd love to end with a happy ending.
Yeah.
Excellent. Anything else we should share with folks right now about the center?
No, just, you know, we truly love all pieces of our community. We always invite new folks. If you don't know who we are, please come visit us. We'd love to have you be a part of everything that's going on. And this week here for April Vacation, we have a ton of amazing programs, everything from, we have book readings every day. We have staff on hand to give guided tours and nature walks. And I think we have meet and greets with some of our ambassador animals. And so on a rainy day like this, or, you know, if you're looking for something to do this week that's low cost but big impact for your family, please come see us.
Okay. Are there volunteer opportunities, Zach, at all?
Yes, there are. We do a volunteer events once a month, and then this week, I think every day from 1 to 3, we've opened volunteer hours so they can help with the nature trails, help make food for animals, help get us, you know, get the place clean and ready for the busy season.
Right, exactly.
Anybody who's interested, we'd love to have them.
On the web, newildlife.org?
Yes.
Website?
Find us at newildlife.org, and it's New England Wildlife Center is on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, and we're working on a YouTube, but it's not quite there yet.
Okay. Or old-fashioned telephone.
Yes, yep. Or you can call us if you have an animal emergency.
Yeah.
It is 508-362-0111. And if you have a call about education programs or on pet vet or anything else, it's 781-682-4878.
All right. Appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and learn a little bit about the center. Hope we helped to remove some of the secrecy.
Absolutely.
The best-kept secrecy.
Yeah, that was fun. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Yeah. Come back, please.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe bring some furry friends with
you. I was going to say, bring the hawk next time if you want.
Or a turtle.
Yeah, or a turtle.
Thanks for watching us here at AM Quincy. I'm Joe Catalano. We'll see you next time.